It's a freedom machine like no other. Starting, growing, and cashing out of your own business.
Then all hell breaks loose.
Burned out, carrying all the weight on your shoulders, fighting fire after fire, never getting a break. But that was so yesterday.
It's time for your business breakthrough. Break out of the bottleneck. Break through to new levels of success. And break into a life you love. Now from Park Avenue in New York City, here's attorney, strategist, and SBA small business champion, Nina Kaufman. This is the Business Breakthrough Podcast.
Hello, how are you? Welcome to Business Breakthrough. I'm your host, Nina Kaufman, coming to you from the heart of New York City, and I'm glad you're here today. Thanks for tuning in. In this episode, we're going to chat with Caroline Soniza Levine. She's an executive coach and business consultant at Six Figure Start about who and how to hire if you want to grow. Because let's face it, one of the key elements in scaling your company and getting it off your shoulders is hiring other people. You can only grow just so much if you have to take care of everything. But hiring can be a really scary process, isn't it? I mean, first of all, it's a huge and a costly mistake if you get it wrong. So there's a lot of pressure riding on getting it right. And for a lot of us, you know, it's not a core business skill or a skill set that we have. So there's that discomfort of, all right, not only is this a high pressure, high cost situation with a lot of potential liability on the line, but we don't do it often. So that's kind of scary. And when it's time to hire, come on, how many of you really plan your hiring process? Or is it that you've reached a point where, oh my God, you're desperate and it's you know, your plate is overflowing and you just need a warm body. Please take this stuff off my plate. And when you're in that kind of rush and that kind of crisis situation, you may not be quite as careful in making the selection process. So that's why it's so valuable to know what goes into a sound hiring process. So you can get that in now before you're in that crazy place. And also to know you don't have to go it alone. There are people out there who can help you with it. So if you're not one who, let's say, like, I don't develop my own website, I don't do my own taxes, there are people out there who can help you with the hiring as well. That's something we touch on in our report, 10 Steps to a $1 Million Business. If you don't have trained eyes in areas where you're not expert, or if you don't have a depth of experience, why would you go out alone there? And how can you make sure that you really create a team that can support you in making these high-cost, really valuable decisions? So for more on that, go to businessexponential.com/podreport to get your copy. And it's why I'm really looking forward to delving into this with our guest this week, because hiring is such a valuable part of creating and growing your team if you do it well. A little bit about Caroline Soniza Levine. Caroline is an executive coach and business consultant at Six Figure Start. She's the author of two books. One is Six Steps to Job Search Success and How the Fierce Handle Fear, Secrets to Succeeding in Challenging Times. She's a leadership columnist for Forbes and an adjunct assistant professor at Columbia University. She has coached executives from Amazon, American Express, Condé Nast, Gilt, Goldman Sachs, Google, McKinsey, and other leading firms. On the hiring front, Caroline has recruited both in-house and has done retained executive search in areas like financial services, management consulting, pharma, biotech, technology, media, and a soft spot in my heart, she's also a stand-up comic. Yay! So she is not your typical coach, and I'm sure brings some well-needed perspective to an area like hiring, which can be fraught with a lot of tension. So that's why we're delighted to have her here on Business Breakthrough. Hey, Caroline, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Now, I'm really happy to have you here because you know all about what goes on behind the scenes in the hiring process. And I have to say, I feel like I'm a complete idiot when I don't get it right. And there have been plenty of times that I don't get it right. So, you know, I'm a business owner. I'm smart. Why am I not getting it right?
Well, here's the thing. You know, hiring is a skill, just like sales is a skill or marketing is a skill. And when you are a business owner that's doing all sorts of things and focused, you know, all across the board, you know, hiring is something that you're just going to do sometimes, right? So you're obviously not going to do it as much as a recruiter who's maybe seen, you know, hundreds, thousands of searches, depending on how much experience they have. And certainly if you're hiring for a variety of different roles, again, you're hiring one role at a time versus a recruiter who has done dozens of those same searches for that one role. So of course you're not going to have that level of expertise. And, you know, there are different things that you want to know about hiring, from legal things to how to vet people to how to, you know, bring someone on board. I mean, there's just, it's an entire process. Of course, you're not going to know all of that.
Well, can you tell me where are, let's say, the top three roadblocks that get in the way of business owners from really hiring successfully?
Well, I think the biggest thing is when a business owner doesn't exactly know what he or she wants. So, you know, there might be a need. Maybe there was a client that was lost because they were too busy, or maybe something fell through the cracks, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, I need someone to take care of that, right? And so that becomes this problem in the rearview mirror, as opposed to a really thoughtful list of items, of plans, of projects that the business owner really wants this person to accomplish. So the business owner hasn't thought through, you know, how am I even going to know what success looks like when I do hire someone? So they just aren't quite sure what they need. And then therefore they either start looking in the wrong place, or they don't look at all, or, you know, whatever it is. So one is knowing what you need. I think the second thing is then, you know, knowing how to hire for that, right? So then part of it might be, no, I know exactly what I need. I do have these projects on the horizon, and I need to find this type of profile. But then they don't know where to start. Perhaps they just start talking to people, and it's down a rabbit hole. You know, they'll talk to one person, they get referred to someone, they post a job, hundreds of resumes come in, and most of them are bad, you know, and so they can waste a lot of time, you know, just in that hiring maze, you know, figuring out what's the way to go. And then I would say there's this third piece that I've seen a lot when you're dealing with more than one decision maker. So if you have a small company already, and it's not just you that needs to make a decision, it's other people are going to be working with this person, or other people might have projects for this person, and you've all decided that it makes sense to bring, you know, another person in, and then there are these competing ideas about what this person should be doing. And so there hasn't been agreement or buy-in from everybody. That's a big problem.
Okay. So let me just quickly dive into each one in turn. You mentioned something interesting around measuring success. What I you know, that's one of those things where business owners say, you know, I need a warm body in the seat. What sorts of things should they be thinking about in terms of success?
Yeah, I mean, I think even posing that question to themselves around how will I know I've hired the right person in 30 days? You know, is it that they're answering the phones in a timely manner? Is it that they're able to kind of run around and anticipate, you know, what I'm thinking and what I'm needing in terms of, you know, office supplies, in terms of little tasks, in terms of, you know, whatever it is? I think even just brainstorming, that's a great way to start, to think about what are all of these things that this person is going to be doing. And then certainly for more senior hires, it's really thinking through, you know, how much is this person going to add to the bottom line, right? If I am looking for a salesperson, how much am I expecting this person to sell? To what types of clients? For all of our products? For just one thing? I mean, being super clear about, you know, how you're going to know that, yes, I made the right decision to bring this person on.
Right. And I like how you refer to knowing whether or not you've made the right hire in 30 days. So is 30 days usually enough? I mean, I've seen probationary periods for 90 days. Yeah. At what point do you know that someone's working or not?
Yeah. So, you know, I say 30 days, although when I coach my clients around either hiring properly or if they're the ones trying to get hired, I have them answer the question for 30, 60, 90, 180, and 360 days. And, you know, we'll keep going out because the picture looks differently. The idea is that the person's going to develop and the job is going to develop. But I do think that the 30-day mark is very telling to get started because there should be an immediate need. And the person that you hire should be productive, you know, very, very quickly. So certainly there are going to be things that they can do that are going to add value from day one. Again, maybe not landing a big sale, that's probably not going to happen, but certainly fitting into the culture, you know, showing that they have a work ethic, you know, showing that they are excited about the company and that they know, you know, that they've learned about the company and that they can do the job at hand, you know, that they have that skill set. So I think, you know, 30 days is enough to get a sense for a person. I do also think that the business owner needs to look at himself or herself regarding how good trainer am I? You know, how good a manager am I? Do I have a very clear idea, you know, how much bandwidth I have to bring this person along, how much opening I have in my schedule, right, for this person to be asking me questions, you know, to be checking in. Because let's face it, the newer you are at a job, I don't care how senior you are going to need more information, more feedback within the first 30, 60, 90 days than you will going forward. And so the business owner really needs to know, like, how much bandwidth do they have to tackle this? Because it is going to be their fault if the person doesn't work out, right? So part of it is about them to bring the person along as well.
Sure. And I think it also may reflect how robust, if any, of like an operations manual or something written down that transmits what's involved in the job and how you like to have it done.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, if this is one of the early hires where there isn't an operations manual, it has to come from somewhere, right? And so maybe it's even this person's being brought on to operationalize some things. But again, they're going to have to get the information from somewhere. So it's being realistic about, okay, how willing am I to sit with this person? How willing am I to give the person the information, the feedback that they need? That's something that, again, an experienced recruiter, someone who knows how to hire, they can tease out, you know, of the business owner, of the hiring manager. They can say, you know, realistically, do you need this person to be able to really figure things out very quickly, or are you going to be around? Because obviously people need different levels of mentorship.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. And to what extent does, I'll call it, company culture come into play in the hiring process?
Well, so here's where it's a double-edged sword. I mean, obviously, company culture it's so important, and it's so important to preserve the culture that the business owner wants to preserve. I mean, the business owner has started this company to create, you know, some, you know, kind of environment against their values and their interests and their mission, and so they need to preserve that. You also, however, want to leave room for diversity of thought, diversity of personalities, so that everyone isn't just a carbon copy of yourself, because then, you know, you're not going to have like the skill sets and the different ideas and the different expertise that you need. So you want to have a cohesive culture, but that doesn't mean that everyone has to be the same. And this is where I go back to those hiring metrics, those success metrics. So when you can say, this is what the person absolutely needs to do, this is what it's going to look like if they're successful, then it's more about these are the tangible results, and you leave room for different personality types and different temperaments to fit that as long as they can get the job done, as opposed to looking for a carbon copy of yourself.
Can you give an example of, let's say, a business client you work with where they were sort of unaware of their culture, where they had a misguided sense of what their environment was like and brought in the wrong person?
Yeah, so I actually worked on a search where, so again, you know, when you're dealing with limited budgets, you know, people can't hire everyone that they want to hire. And so there was a relatively small budget. And so it was decided that the finance person and the marketing person were going to share a resource. And they needed the resource to be someone who's experienced enough so they couldn't have, you know, a 21-year-old newly graduated out of school, but they also couldn't pay to have, you know, a senior person, and they wanted to split the person between finance and marketing. So already you can see there's just a whole host of red flags here. I mean, these are two very different functional areas,
right,
and they need someone who's senior enough but not too senior. You know, again, what does that mean exactly? Mm-hmm. And so it was really teasing out, okay, so what does success look like? I mean, I may sound like a broken record, but this is what I had to walk my clients through, both the finance person and the marketing person, around, so what is it going to look like for you? Because they are two separate people, and they have two very different expectations, and really looking to see, is this indeed one person, or is this two part-time people? And then on top of that, so there was enough overlap that I actually could see that they could get one person, and in fact, they ended up getting one person. But before I even hired that person, we did confirm what the job description was. We confirmed that, yes, this could be, it was actually close enough, could be the same person. But that question around how quickly can you bring this person on? How much are you going to manage this person? You know, how much hand-holding? We don't like to say that word because it implies, oh, you know, I'm hiring someone who's needy. But no, not really, because they had a complicated business. It was going to be two different functional areas. It was a realistic question to ask, you know, who is going to be telling this person what they're going to be doing and when, and integrating them into the culture. And the reality was that the finance person, you know, had it all thought out regarding, you know, how much time she had to spend with the person, and the marketing person was going to be MIA. And so we really needed a personality type, someone who was scrappy enough that they could figure it out, certainly, you know, in relation to the marketing initiative, but then would also be okay with a more hands-on manager on the finance part. So that's where kind of that culture fit, you know, what are the personalities of the group? That's where that comes in.
That's I mean, it sounds like you found somebody schizophrenic, because those really do sound like.
No, you know what? It was just a very poised, savvy person who happened to have deep marketing and financial background, and just, you know, was very good with people. That's really what I was looking for, because he would have to toggle back and forth between two different personality types.
Mm, that's amazing. And you touched on something interesting, whether you hire one person or two part-time people. How do you weigh whether to go the full-time, part-time, or maybe even freelancer route?
Right. So part of it is, you know, financial. That's probably the easiest thing that people understand, right, is their budget for a full-time person, is their budget for a part-time person. Freelance, the advantage there is that there are no benefits involved, and so you're paying a set rate, and so you kind of know in advance. You're not taking the person on indefinitely, right? So there are financial advantages and disadvantages of all of these things. And then you have to look at, of course, the amount of work that needs to get done. If there's a lot of work, it might make more sense to commit to a full-time person if the role is going to grow, if you foresee that you're going to keep running into these issues of needing more and more help, then yeah, maybe it makes sense to commit to a full-time person. But, you know, in that example of, you know, finance needed something, marketing needs something, can we really find this in one person? You know, maybe they couldn't, and that would make more sense to bring on two part-time people. Or perhaps if, let's say, finance at this point was more clear about what their needs were, and could see this being a need ongoing where it makes sense to bring this expertise in-house, then yeah, maybe they need a part-time person, but marketing only needs project help, needs some freelancers, because they're not quite sure what they need. They're not ready to commit. So there are a whole host of issues that come in, and this is why hiring is not cut and dry, and you want someone who has seen a number of situations and perhaps can help you with, you know, what's best practice out there. Oh, I've seen this situation at another company, and here's how they tackled it, and give you ideas on what's been done before so you don't reinvent the wheel.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. And one of the things that I see occasionally, especially online, is all of these different kinds of tests for potential employees, whether it's a Myers-Briggs or Colby, I think is one that I'm hearing more and more about.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What are these tests actually test, and are they truly useful?
So, you know, I've seen companies hire successfully using these tests. I've seen companies hire successfully without these tests. These tests cost money, and they're best done when you have, you know, pretty rigorous understanding of your own personality dynamics at your own company. So that also costs time and costs money to figure out. And so I'm not a big proponent of these tests early on in a company's development. I think it's much more important. I do favor testing, but the testing that I tell people to do is more skills-based or expertise-based testing. Again, getting back to how do you know you'll have hired the right person? So, you know, when you're hiring your technology person to look at a line of code, when you're hiring a marketing person to ask for some kind of sample or to ask for a marketing critique of stuff that you're doing so that you can see how they think and if they really know what they're doing. If it's, you know, something in HR, you know, maybe having them do a presentation around the metrics that they've used in the past for to make hiring decisions. So you can see if you're on the same page regarding how you would tackle certain issues. And then also, again, you can test. You can see right away what their expertise is without having to spend so much time on the interview process, which is inherently subjective. It's a conversation between two people and with all of our biases, you know, conscious and unconscious that we're bringing into the conversation.
That's a great point. And I've also seen and had some clients used what I'll call the hoop jumping, that if you want to apply to this job, listen to the instructions or call in at a certain time, send me an email with, you know, three paragraphs describing.
Right.
Have you seen a lot of that?
Right. That's a form of testing, if you will, you know, because there may be some companies who will say, I want you to do, so the three paragraph is an example. I want you to write three paragraphs, and if the person comes back with two paragraphs or if the person doesn't come back with anything, you know, the hiring manager assumes like, okay, you see this person can't follow instructions, therefore they flunked the test, therefore I'm not even going to look at this person. I know some hiring managers who will put your salary down. If someone doesn't put their salary down, they consider that, you know, also not following instructions. So what I would say is, sure, that's one example of a test. The thing that I don't like about that particular test is I feel like it's a test more of someone's job search approach. You know, I know some candidates who just have a very formulaic approach to their job search. They won't reveal what their salary is. They won't do a three-paragraph essay or any kind of quote-unquote work unless they know that a company is serious about them, right? So it's more about their own approach to job search than it is about anything that they would do on the job. And so I feel like those are not great tests. I think that you should design a test, again, that's around skills or around expertise. And the other problem with testing, you know, around these job search skills is you might want to get a candidate that isn't aggressively looking, you know, that isn't going to jump through hoops early on in the search process. And so those are the candidates, you know, that could be very, very valuable to your firm. They might be gainfully employed. They might be very happy where they are, but they might have just exactly the right expertise for you. And so you really want to set up such a rigid hiring process that you won't be able to attract these people, where you might have to start with a conversation. And it's more like a sell or a networking conversation in the very beginning before you can start probing.
And so how do business owners tread that fine line? You mentioned having people show some of their work and designing a test around skill or expertise, but then people understandably don't want to be doing work for free to showcase what they can do without knowing that a company is really serious. So what kinds of things have you seen where companies have reached a kind of happy medium in designing a test around skill?
Yeah, I think that the request should be commensurate with the interest shown by the company. So I think in the very beginning, you know, if you want to set up a test that's very early on for a variety of candidates, it should be something that's very short and that's very easy to do. So it might be, again, a line of code. It might be an Excel test. So I had a marketing group that set up, it was maybe 10 questions in Excel, or, you know, around simple marketing concepts, also around just simple financials, and the test could be administered virtually. So basically, I would just agree with the candidate, you're going to be available for these 20 minutes. It's a time test. I'm going to send you this email. You're going to send it back to me with your responses. It didn't take a lot of time, and they didn't have to come into the office. Mm-hmm. So that's an easy, you know, kind of first or second round. Then I've also seen, so similar marketing, where they asked for a presentation, and it was a presentation to senior management. But they only asked this of the person that they wanted to hire and then the backup person. So there were two people that they asked for an actual presentation. And in fact, it could have been, they gave them a choice. It said, you can do a presentation on a company that you think we are going to be pitching, or you can take something that you've done before that you think is similar to our line of work, and you can sanitize it to protect the confidentiality of your own company, and that's fine, right? So they wanted to make it as, again, least intrusive as possible. But at the same time, you know, they wanted to see this person present. They wanted to get a sense for their approach to marketing, which did entail, you know, I'm going to take you through a company that I have pitched and, you know, what I recommended to them and all of that. So yeah, at that point, they had already met with this person multiple times. The person was clearly interested. The company had clearly invested in this person, bringing them in, giving them access to senior people. So I felt like that was a fair request of them. They were also quite senior, right? So this was a role that would pay very well. I don't think that they should do this for interns. You know, I mean, like, they wouldn't have time to do that. And, you know, so it has to be commensurate with what the role is and, of course, the interest of the company and the interest that the person has shown.
Sure. And I think it'd be a little crazy to expect it out of an intern right out of school to have that level of skill set. But that is another issue. So last question for you. I understand that business owners can get kind of bogged down in a hiring process, especially if, as you say, from the outset, they haven't decided what success will be. But generally, how long does a hiring process take, or how long should it take? You know, how do you know at what point, wow, I'm either not getting the results that I'm wanting, or this is just taking too long, where you say, I need to rethink how I'm doing this?
Yeah, so this is, again, this is why hiring is an expertise, right? It's going to range. If it's a very specific position and there are few candidates with this set of skills, so it could be, you know, a senior position. And so just by default, there's few people that have all of that experience and that range of experience. You know, that's going to take a while to identify the person and then to vet the person. And if it's a hot area, to convince people who are sought after to come over. So that can take a while. Or if, again, let's go to the other extreme, you know, with interns where you're looking for general work ethic, you know, you're not expecting them to have very specific skills, or maybe they are office skills that are generally available everywhere, you should be able to turn that search around relatively quickly, right? And I would say even you could find someone in a week if your networks are primed to send you folks, and if you have a process in place where you're going to interview, you can test them, you can make a decision. You know, where companies get bogged down is because they haven't determined who's talking to this person, who's making this decision, who's going to manage this person when they come on. So they start this search process, and then they haven't worked out all of the logistics, and then all of a sudden it slows down as they're trying to work this out on the fly. And that's just for an intern, right? Then as you add more levels of experience, more people have to get involved, more decision makers, more questions that you need to ask as the business owner and as the company. You know, this can get exponentially long if the company is not prepared to make decisions. Okay, three people, we're going to be available the same day. You know, there are ways that you can speed it up, but the company has to be committed.
Right. And also, I think if you're in a situation where you're sensing a problem and you just want to throw people at it, like throw money at it, and just say, I need warm bodies in the seats, make it go away, that's often an area where you can get really bogged down. Because as you say, you haven't thought through that process and who's truly going to be right in the role.
Yeah, and this is where you might, you know, getting to one of your earlier questions about full-time versus contract or freelance, and this is where you might want to just get a freelancer, right, if you really need someone quickly, because this is a person who, by choice, doesn't need any hand-holding, right? This person who's used to being parachuted into situations where they're there for a limited amount of time and adding value immediately. And so arguably you should be able to get more quickly out of a freelancer. So if your back is against the wall, then get the freelancer in there while you're looking so you don't feel like you have to rush that process.
Okay, terrific. Well, Caroline, all great points about defining success, knowing if you have the bandwidth to train people, and recognizing, as I say often enough, you can't do everything really well. So this in particular, because of the legal and onboarding issues, really helpful to get support around how you're hiring so that you can grow and scale. Well, Caroline, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Nina.
Hey, thanks for listening. Remember, go over to businessexponential.com right now and download our 10 steps to a $1 million business. We lay it out for you step by step, the 10 building blocks that'll have you building and growing your business so it's not so dependent on you. Won't that be a relief? Of course it will. So do it right this minute so you don't forget. You'll see it there on top of the homepage. Go to businessexponential.com.